Well, we are in John chapter 10. We're planning on being in John chapter 10 for a little while. And last week, we introduced this chapter by talking about sheep. We talked a lot about sheep. Didn't even realize going into it just how many times we'd say the word sheep. We did. We got through. We did okay. This idea of if we are going to talk about Jesus the shepherd, we ought to recognize what it means to be sheep. And as we were looking at sheep and the shepherds last week. Sorry, I have more stuff than I normally do up here. Got to get it all arranged just right. As we're talking about sheep and shepherds, we backed up to Ezekiel. So he said to talk about John 10, and we're going to spend time in John 10 now. Let's go to Ezekiel 34. We looked at Ezekiel 34 and some things that through the prophet God had to say about the leadership of Israel, but had to say about their priests and their kings and their leaders, had some criticism placed on them. He talked about what a shepherd was supposed to do. Talked about they are supposed to protect the sheep. They're supposed to care for them, keep them safe. If they're sick, they take care of them. If they are lost, they find them. They bring them to the land to graze. They show them the way to be taken care of. And he says that's not what the leaders of Israel were doing. He said they saw their role not to take care of the sheep. But one of the verses that we saw, he says, I am against the shepherds and will hold them accountable for the flock. I will remove them from tending the flock so that the shepherds can no longer feed themselves. I will rescue my flock from their mouths and it will no longer be food for them. He said they're supposed to be caring for the sheep, and all that they see that as is being first in line for the meat. They're supposed to see sheep. Something to care for, and all they see is meat. The bacon tie, this is a mutton tie today. Well, I think it works. So we saw that this shepherd imagery draws on this tradition from Ezekiel. But today I want to look at the people that Jesus was specifically talking to. When he's talking about the failures of the shepherds, he's not just talking about large scale. He's not just referring to the day of Ezekiel. He was speaking to specific leaders at this time. Sometimes the way that our chapters and verses are put in the Bible, overall, it is helpful, right? We're able to point exactly to where we want to go. But sometimes we can miss connections. And even though we have a chapter break going from chapter 9 to chapter 10, Jesus was talking to the same group that he was in chapter 9. So we're going to back up a little bit into John chapter 9. You hopefully are familiar with the narrative found in John chapter 9. It's with Jesus healing a blind person. Of course, there's a few of those. We know a few examples of Jesus healing somebody who's blind. In John chapter 9, he finds a blind man, and they start to strike up a theological debate, theological question. This man's blind. Whose sin was it? Was it his sin, parents' sin? And some might scratch your head and say, if he was born blind, how would that be? How could that be his sin? And actually, there were debates you find in the Talmud and other Jewish writings to say, well, if you remember, Jacob and Esau fought while in the womb, so I guess you possibly could do some wrong. Or we're not going to get into that. We're not going to worry about it. But Jesus, he stops them in that discussion right away. He says, it's not because of sin. He didn't sin. His parents didn't sin. This happened so that the work of God might be displayed in his life. And Jesus heals him. Makes it so he can see. He makes some mud or some clay and puts it on his eyes. Says, go wash. And strangely, perhaps, he says to go, and then Jesus kind of sneaks out the other way. Jesus disappears from most of this narrative. This is, I've been told, I haven't done the measurements or all the research, so this is the longest continuous narrative in John, and Jesus disappears for most of it. And we're left with this discussion, to use a friendly word, between the man and the Pharisees. And they're trying to figure out what has happened here. And they're trying to figure out, was he blind? Because if we can show that he wasn't blind, then he wasn't healed. And I said, yes, he was blind. And they bring his parents into it. And they try to find out, what can you tell us about him? What was he blind? What happened? And they say, well, here's what we know. We know he's our son. We know he was born blind. We know he can see now. But we can't say what happened. We don't know what happened. Go ask him. He's old enough. And I said, they said this because they were afraid of the Jewish leaders, who had already decided that anyone who acknowledged that Jesus was the Messiah would be put out of the synagogue. And that's why his parents said, he's of age, go ask him. See, we see some undercurrents going on in the scene. We see some of these discussions that have already been had. Some of these waves that have already been made by what Jesus was doing. And we see some of these leading questions that the Pharisees are asking are trying to figure out, how much of a problem do we have here? And what is going to need to be done? Because they can't celebrate somebody who was blind and now can see. They have to say, is this going to cause a problem for us? And there is this threat hanging over this whole scene. This reference to the decision that anyone who acknowledged Jesus as Messiah, we don't have any official statement at the time of the gospel about this. We don't know what exactly the decision was and who made it. But we have a little bit later in the history of the church, history of Judaism, because it's all intertwined early on, especially. There was a statement called the Benediction Against Heretics. This was around the year 70. And been around churches, you probably know 70 was a big year. 70 was the year that the Second Temple was destroyed. That was the last time the temple was destroyed. Go to Jerusalem now, and what the remains that are there, that's the temple that was there in Jesus' day and was destroyed soon after. And a lot of the identity of the Jewish people was called into question when they said, we don't have a temple, what do we do now? And they start to ask questions of themselves, and they start to blame others. And the response of the Pharisees and the rabbis that largely came into power after that time when the official temple authority wasn't there. Their response was, well, we need to make sure anybody that thinks or acts differently than we do is put out. Therefore, if we can get everybody who does things differently, thinks things differently, out, then everybody who is in is pure and acceptable to God. Right? So, this statement, for the apostates, those who fell away, let there be no hope, and let the arrogant government be speedily uprooted in our days. Let the Nazarenes, or Christians, and the heretics be destroyed in a moment, and let them be blotted out of the book of life, and not be inscribed together with the righteous. Blessed are you, O Lord, who humbles the proud. So we have to get these people out. The Christians. People who think like the Sadducees. People who think like the Essenes. People who think differently than we do. If they are out, then we know everybody who is in is good. So this statement came later than John 9. But it came before the book of John was probably written. That's the distinction there. So this statement would not have been familiar to the man's parents. It would have been familiar to anybody reading or hearing the book of John and connecting to their situation. That things that were going on then are similar to the things that are going on in your life now. They understood the threat. They understood this danger of being cast out, of being rejected. And we see a few verses later when there's been some back and forth between the Pharisees and the man, and you know, he really steps up and starts to speak with some confidence, and he sounds more like the teacher than they do in their conversation. And they ask some questions. He says, this is amazing. You don't know where he comes from, yet he opened my eyes. We know that God does not listen to sinners. He listens to the godly person who does his will. No one has ever heard of the opening of the eyes of a man born blind. If this man were not from God, he could do nothing. He is speaking truth, but he is not speaking what they want to hear and what they're teaching. So they go back to the same language that is at the very beginning of the chapter. It says, you're steeped in sin at birth. That's why you're blind. Why would we listen to somebody who's sinful? How dare you lecture us? And they threw him out. They had a job to be caring for the sheep of Israel. And they said, this one, he was fine when we could ignore him. Just a blind guy. Let him sit down someplace and beg. Now he's causing trouble. Get him out. Throw him out of the fold. Remember, Jesus had been strangely absent for this scene, this debate. It is the longest narrative absence of Jesus in the book of John. The longest time that we see things going on without Jesus being there. He's kind of a big deal in the book. But he's not there at the man's side as they're trying to sort this out. And on one hand, it might have been helpful. He might have been, he said, you're asking me the questions? Ask him who he is. You know, that's what the man's parents did. Right? We don't want to answer. We're afraid. Ask him. If Jesus had been there, this guy might have said, I don't know. Here's what he did. But ask him who he is. But Jesus isn't there. And then when they throw the guy out, a
verse that I didn't clip.
And verse 35, the next verse, Jesus heard that they had thrown him out. And when he found him,
Jesus heard he was thrown out, he sought him out.
When he found him, he said, "Do you believe in the Son of Man?" And they have some interaction, and they talk about what that means. And the man said, "Lord, I believe." And he worshiped him. And Jesus said, "For judgment, I have come into this world so that the blind will see, and those who see will become blind." Well, it says he went and searched the guy out. Apparently, he wasn't too far, because the Pharisees are still here in the area. They can still hear. And what is he talking about? He says, the blind can see, and those who can see be blind. Are you calling us blind? Are we blind too? And there's a handy thing in Greek when people ask a question with a negative in it. There's two different negation words, two words for not or no. And when you put them as the first word in your question, one of them means you expect a positive answer, one means you expect the negative answer. It's really handy. But sometimes we have these questions, we say, we always debate, what is the answer? Well, the author seems to know the answer. Here, it's saying, are we blind too? So in a sense, there is a bit of an English way of saying this. It would be as saying, we aren't blind, are we? You know, they're expecting that negative answer. There, that lesson's free, and you're not interested. All right, he says, they say, we're not blind, are we? And he says, yes, of course you are. You're looking at that guy who couldn't see, and you're talking about him being blind. He says, you have the light of the world standing in front of you, and you can't see it. You're worried about that guy. You're the ones that are missing it. He says, and not only are you blind, there are some other things that you think you are that you are not. You think you can see, but you can't. You think you're a watchman. So this is when he gets into chapter 10. John has this way of framing some of his teaching sections where it goes narrative, dialogue, teaching. So we have the narrative, we have this interaction between Jesus and the Pharisees, and now he's going to teach them. He's going to show them, you think you can see, but you're blind. You think you're a watchman, you are not watchmen. Because the sheep don't fear the watchman. They will never follow a stranger. They will run away because they don't know his voice. You think you're a watchman, but you act out of fear, and your people fear you. You can't see. You're not a watchman. You think you're shepherds. You look at Ezekiel and you think that's saying something good about you. You're not shepherds. Because shepherds lay down their lives for the sheep. You ask the sheep to lay down their lives for you. And you feast. You suck the life from their bones. A shepherd protects the flock from predators. You beat the predators to the punch. And those that you can't get something from, you send them away. You don't have a clue who you are, he says. He says, you lead through fear and threats and exile. Jesus says he is sent to be something different. He says God expects something different from those who are caring for the flock. Jesus says, I'm the gate. Before he gets to I'm the shepherd, he says, I'm the gate. You don't decide who comes and goes. I do. The gate decides who comes in. The gate decides who goes out. And we're going to look more at that gate, that I am the gate statement, next week. He says, I am the gate. And that makes sure the predators stay out and the sheep stay in. When Jesus talks about how he cares for the flock as the good shepherd, when he talks about how he is not sending them away, he can draw on something he said earlier in John. This is after the feeding of the 5,000, feeding of the 4,000. And Jesus is talking with his disciples, and some of them are having a hard time understanding what he's going to say. This is right after I am the bread of life. And right before, people say, are you talking about cannibalism? That's a different lesson. Jesus says, all those the Father gives me will come to me. And whoever comes to me, I will never drive away. For I have come down from heaven not to do my will, but to do the will of him who sent me. And this is the will of him who sent me, that I shall lose none of all of those he has given me, but raise them on that day. There's a difference between Jesus, the good shepherd, Jesus, the gate, and these Pharisees that would think of themselves as shepherds and would think of themselves as gatekeepers and watchmen. He says, you are not concerned for the well-being of the flock. You are sending them away. You are scaring them away. You are issuing threats that if you don't do what I like, if you don't say what I say, you're going to be out. Jesus looks at a statement like the benediction against heretics and says, you are worried about getting rid of the sheep that you think are not quite right. I'm not sending anybody away. In fact, jumping back to John 10, this discussion of the Good Shepherd, says, I have other sheep that are not of this sheep pen, and I've got to bring them too. They too will listen to my voice, and there shall be one flock and one shepherd. Says, not only am I not pushing out the sheep that God blessed me and you and us with, I'm not pushing them out. I've got more. There's room here for more. He's going to talk about Gentiles coming in. That's good news. We need that, right? We would not have been in the flock in the minds of the Pharisees there. But Jesus had us in mind. He says, I've got more. He says, we are not pushing people out. We are bringing them in because that's what a shepherd does. You're blind. And you don't know what you're doing. And you're feasting on those that you're supposed to be caring for. When Jesus starts talking in John chapter 10 about I am the good shepherd and those who the sheep follow and those that don't, he's talking to a very real situation. He's talking to a very real problem within God's people, where those who are supposed to be shepherds have turned themselves into something dangerous. God's people will be commended for those that they bring in, not for those that they push out. we need to make sure that we are not losing our place. You know, there are a lot of good people trying to do this. A lot of good people trying to make sure we are bringing in all that we can. And I would say one of the problems that is not unique to the Churches of Christ, but we sure do it, is the making sure that those who don't belong know they don't belong. There are a lot of good publications out there among the fellowship and the Churches of Christ, and there are a lot of them that are far more interested in labeling the heretics from outside and from inside and making sure that the pattern is followed and that those who are missing something, those who don't get everything right, know that they are on the outside. When I look at John 10, and when I look at the situation that he's addressing in John 9, it cautions me. And it makes me want to be very careful. We want to make sure that if we have the blessing to be able to reach anybody, whether they identify themselves as God's people or they don't yet, that we see them as part of the flock, that we see them as a sheep that God cares about. Jesus says at this time, there is a whole world worth of people that don't know a thing yet. I love them and I'm coming for them. And don't get in my way. Jesus is the gate. If somebody needs to be turned away, let that be the call of Jesus when the day comes. We ought not to put ourselves in the way of anybody who would come into the pen, who would come into the fold. Let's not make ourselves blind. Let's follow the example of Jesus. We're going to keep going in John 10. We're going to see some more of what Jesus means by he is the gate, he is the good shepherd, what it means to be in the flock, and what it means to have the responsibility of being either a leader or someone experienced or knowledgeable, somebody influential. I don't think you need a title in order to be in a place where you can be influential in the church, in the community, in the flock. We're going to look some more. We're going to keep spending some time in John, and we're going to talk about what it means to follow the voice and to recognize the voice of Jesus. But I want us to keep that image of the man from John 9 fresh in our minds as we look at this. He was in a very low place, blind and begging. And he received a miracle. He received a blessing. He was given a gift by the Savior. And the people that he respected and the people who were supposed to be the ones to care for and nurture his spiritual growth crushed that right out of him. At least they did their best to. And we don't know the ongoing story of that man, but we started off where he was a Jewish man in a bad place. And through getting that blessing, he ended up cast out. Now I hope, I pray that his interactions with Jesus and perhaps his interactions with the disciples meant he was still able to nurture that and find that care that he needed. I don't know. But what I do know is that the people that were supposed to do it failed. And I don't want to be on that side of that. I don't ever want to be somebody strangling that life, that joy. We were talking on Wednesday about quenching the spirit and all the things that might mean. What a shame if we find ourselves doing that. So we're going to talk about some more positive things in upcoming weeks, I hope. Yeah, let's do that. But I want to keep that image fresh in our minds. It matters. We don't want to be called among the blind. We don't want to be called among the predators when we're talking about shepherds and sheep. So that's next week. We'll talk about the gate. For today, that's all. If there's anything you need, this is family time. This is family. If you haven't hugged Barb, hug Barb. If you haven't hugged me, I need a hug too. If you need prayers, if you need anything, that's what we're here for. This is a safe place. We are under the care of a good shepherd. And we are loved. And so if you're needing to feel that love, if you're needing anything, come let us know. Come forward as we stand and sing. Jesus is tenderly calling thee home.